Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University. This is episode LII, Hadrian the Little Greek. The Emperor Trajan is now dead, and Rome finds itself left with some pretty big shoes to fill. Into them steps his adopted son, Hadrian. The coming of a new emperor will always be met with interesting times. But first, a quick word on sources, and what we're left with when talking about Hadrian. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
Oh dear. Well, when we get to Hadrian, it all drops off a bit, really. When we get to Hadrian, of course, we don't have Suetonius anymore. But we have a kind of Suetonius stand-in. We have the writers of the Augustan history, which is usually known as the Historia Augusta. And what this is biographies written, people argue about this, but probably in the 4th century CE by a variety of different people. Mm. And the one of Hadrian, we think, was written by Aelius Spartianus. It doesn't really like him very much, but at least we're back with biography. We also have Dio Cassius, always have Dio Cassius. By this point, we only have Dio Cassius in epitome, which means that the original Dio Cassius has been lost, but he's been summarized by a man called Xiphilinus. So book 69 of Dio Cassius is the Hadrian as emperor book.
Yeah, okay.
There was apparently an autobiography. The Historia Augusta mentions this right at the beginning. Hadrian himself relates in his autobiography that his forefathers came from Hadria, giving Hadrian his name, presumably, but settled in Italica in the time of the Scipios.
Mm.
So, obviously, there's the reference to the autobiography. We don't hear about it again. We don't know what happened to it.
Would have been good to have that.
It would indeed. What it does tell us is that the family claimed to come originally from northern Italy.
Mm.
From Hadria, which is on the northeast coast, but that they had been in Spain since the time of the Second Punic War.
That's the same place that Trajan came from, though, isn't it?
Yes. So they're both from Italica, both Romano-Spanish emperors, who are very firmly Roman citizens, but from the western part of the Roman world.
Okay. So those are the sources. So what do we know about Hadrian's birth then and the family that he had besides his cousin, his dad's cousin, besides Trajan? Let's get into that.
Well, he's born in, we're told, the 7th consulship of Vespasian, which is 76 CE on the 24th of January. And his full name is Publius Aelius Hadrianus. The name Aelius is an important family name, and it's the one that's often used of things that are named after him.
Mm.
So, for example, the original name of Newcastle in northern England, which is founded by Hadrian, is Pons Aelius, which means the Aelian Bridge. He built the bridge over the River Tyne, what is now the River Tyne. What else do we know about his family? His family, of course, is related to Trajan. And if we look at the family tree, Trajan's father was the brother of Hadrian's paternal grandmother. Trajan's aunt had a son who was the father of Hadrian.
So a couple of generations removed then.
Yes.
But close enough for it to be a good, you know, well, everybody wants a family link to the emperor.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly Hadrian is well into adulthood by the time Trajan becomes emperor.
Mm, yeah, there's been worse familial links in the emperor's family trees, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And remember, for the Romans, adoption doesn't have to be from someone linked to you by blood.
Yeah.
Indeed, we're getting into the period of the adoptive emperors, or we are in the period of the adoptive emperors, and they don't always adopt quite so close. There's no link between Nerva and Trajan after all.
So was he born in Spain then, the same place as Trajan, where his family's from?
Well, it's not entirely clear from our sources, and this is one of the problems of the Historia Augusta. It's sometimes contradictory. First of all, the Historia Augusta says he was actually born in Rome. This is in chapter 3. But then it refers to Hadrian returning to his native city, his patria, which is Italica, in the very next chapter. So that implies that he was born in Italica, he came to Rome and he went back to Italica. He clearly had close links with both, though, because he spent time in both of them in his early life.
Yeah.
His family were also very well established in Spain. And clearly by this period, that does you no harm in terms of rising through the ranks of either the military or imperial administration. And Spain is somewhere that's been a province for a long time. So it's well established. And it's been a long time since there was a problem with senators coming from Spain. They're some of the earliest non-Italians to be senators.
Mm.
And both of his parents were from Spanish families. So his father's obviously from Italica. His mother is from what we now call Cadiz, which was Gades in antiquity. And we know her name. She was Domitia Paulina. Both of them died when Hadrian was fairly young. His father died when he was 10. And it's at that point that he becomes a ward of Trajan, along with somebody called Atianus.
Trajan was a general at the time off with the military.
Yeah, because this is in 85 CE, during the reign of Domitian. So this is years before Trajan has any connection with the imperial family other than being a rising military figure. But at that point, Hadrian certainly came to Rome. So he comes in his teens if he hadn't been there earlier.
I assume he gets quite a good upbringing.
His natal family, as it were, is they're rich Romans. They're rich Romans from Spain, which is what Trajan is. He's clearly been well educated in Greek culture, which is normal for a Roman, but Hadrian seems to have particularly loved it. So he loved Greek literature and Greek art, and this will certainly come out later. But even at that point, he's getting called the Little Greek, or Graeculus, which is sort of seen as an insult in the biography, which may tell us more about the 4th century context of the biography than about Hadrian. It may not actually have been used as an insult against Hadrian.
But is it in the same kind of realm as calling Gaius Caligula?
It's exactly the same form of word, because that UL in Caligula and the UL in Graeculus means little.
Okay.
So it's often used in quite, you know, an affectionate way. Oh, you little. You little Greek, little boots, which is certainly the way it was meant for Caligula. He's wearing little army boots. How very cute. Yeah, I guess it depends on the tone of voice, as with all of these things, doesn't it? And whether there was a swear word in front of it. He loved hunting as well. This is something that continues into the time when he's emperor. So he likes healthy outdoor sports as far as the Romans are concerned. And when he goes back to Spain, he goes back to Italica in 90 CE. This is something that he really indulges in.
Yeah.
So he likes riding and he likes hunting wild animals.
As he progresses through his young Roman adulthood, what sort of career path is he going on? Is he following in Trajan's wake?
Yes. I mean, he has connections with the military. There's a lot of overlap between administration and the military by this period. And remember, in the 90s, we're in the later years of Domitian's reign, but still not clear that Trajan is going to rise to power at all. So he kind of has a minor local magistracy. Then he becomes a military tribune, which is a good route to a career path. It means that you are kind of responsible for the discipline of a particular segment of the legion. He's got connections to the military that are going to be very, very important because he will be seen as a successful general. And of course, that makes sense given that he's connected to Trajan, who's also rising through the military.
Trajan and by extension, Hadrian are doing quite well during Domitian's reign, but it was really when Domitian died that their careers really took off at that point, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's the failure of Domitian that brings them to power. I don't think that they ever would have been emperors or got anywhere near that close to power if it weren't for the fact that Domitian was so incredibly unpopular that he's assassinated. Another lucky break for them in a way is the fact that the Senate for once gets its act together and puts an emperor in, so they put Nerva in. But as you might expect, Nerva doesn't really connect that well with the army and the people. He hasn't needed to do that. And so Nerva quickly realizes he needs someone who's a popular figure, somebody who can make that connection to be his heir, and that's why he adopts Trajan.
Trajan's good news is, by extension, Hadrian's good news.
It certainly will be. Trajan was out in the provinces when Nerva adopted Trajan in 97 CE. Hadrian was the one who was sent to tell him. So there's already a handy connection there with the succession.
Mm.
Also, another outcome of this is because Hadrian's sent to give him the message in Upper Germany, which paradoxically is further south than Lower Germany, but try not to think about it too much.
We're talking about contour lines here, aren't we?
Hadrian gets to stay there. Yeah. So he's now kind of embedded with Trajan on campaign, and this is Trajan who is the nominated successor and will be emperor before he knows it the following year.
I suppose Hadrian's got a very strong association with the emperor, because after too long, Trajan becomes emperor, and then suddenly you're the ward of the emperor and another guy named Atianus. But, you know, Trajan.
This link is made even more secure in 100 CE, so 2 years after Trajan becomes emperor, when Hadrian marries the great niece of Trajan, who's called Sabina.
So that brings an even closer association, because he's not formally adopted at all.
There's kind of the double link that both he and his spouse are related to Trajan.
So is this something that Trajan wanted, this link?
Well, the Historia Augusta, which I would say is universally hostile and wants to get a dig in wherever it can, claims that it's Trajan's wife, Plotina, who arranged this. But the Historia Augusta clearly has an axe to grind about Hadrian and Plotina, and Plotina being overly fond of Hadrian, and there maybe being something dubious about that, and that she's the one pushing Hadrian forward.
Mm.
And like a lot of ancient sources, when they want to imply that there's something suspicious going on, they'll say that a woman was behind it, because she's not meant to be the one in power. She's not the one who's emperor. And a lot of these sources have a problem with the women in the imperial family having influence. But certainly Plotina seems to be an important figure in Hadrian's life.
At this point, you know, Trajan becoming emperor is great for young Hadrian's career.
Yeah, he's not instantly made consul or anything, but he does continue through the traditional career path, and he gets a relatively high magistracy as quaestor, which is sort of the third one down. He's suddenly, I guess, thrust into the public limelight at this point, and the biography tells us that he was mocked for his rustic Latin when he spoke in public, because, of course, he's from Spain.
Trajan also got kind of
mocked
behind.
Presumably so, because they would have had the same accent.
Yeah.
Considered provincials. It's moved on since the time of Augustus. The historian Livy apparently was mocked for his northern Italian accent. Now it's, if you come from Spain, you've got the funny Latin accent. I feel quite sorry for Hadrian about this, and the biography says that he had to polish his Latin, give himself the right received pronunciation. Anyway, this doesn't stop him at all. He goes with Trajan to the First Dacian War in 101. After the Dacian Wars, Hadrian's hopes were raised by the fact that he was given a ring from Trajan, which Trajan had previously received from Nerva. So that looks like the passing on of the succession, saying, you will be my successor as I was Nerva's.
So he maybe took that as a bit of a symbol.
He might well have done. Then he becomes tribune of the plebs. It was a very important republican magistracy, but now it's very honorific, and of course gives him a connection with the people, at least metaphorically. Then he becomes legate of a legion in the Second Dacian Wars. So he's got both military and popular magistracies here. After this, he has a very steady career progress. He has a military and administrative role as governor of Lower Pannonia, and he has a successful military campaign keeping the Sarmatians in check, and also keeping his own soldiers disciplined, which is important. I think this might be kind of a test. Can Hadrian be in charge?
Yeah,
and
okay.
He succeeds. And also, according to the biography, he restrained the procurators, which is important because these are the magistrates who deal with finances. And they, of course, are quite inclined to be on the take and to maybe not put all of the taxes back into the treasury. So Hadrian stops this from happening. If this is a test, then he passes it. And in 108, he gets the consulship, the top magistracy. And according to Trajan's close friend and political ally, a man called Sura, Trajan is about to adopt Hadrian at this point. So this is in 108, nearly a decade before Trajan dies, but it doesn't seem to happen. And indeed, shortly after this, Sura himself dies. If that's true, then maybe Sura was trying to smooth the way towards this, but he died before it could happen. It's not made official at this stage, and Trajan never seems to quite get round to it. The important thing from the biographer's point of view is that everybody starts to talk about Hadrian as the potential successor. And he actually says, which I think is quite sad because this is a decade really into Hadrian being around the imperial court, that the courtiers start to treat him with respect at this point because they see him as a serious contender. Thereupon, this is the quote, thereupon he ceased to be an object of contempt and neglect to Trajan's friends, which means they were, you know, they were shouting insults at him or just ignoring him when he spoke before then.
Yeah.
Poor old Hadrian. But actually Sura's death is in a way quite good for Hadrian, although he may have lost an ally, because Sura was the speechwriter of Trajan and now Hadrian gets that role, which of course puts him very, very close to Trajan.
So we established that Trajan wasn't all that good with words, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, that's right, yes.
So Hadrian was clearly very different in that he had a way with words. He wrote his autobiography.
Indeed, so, yes. He's a much more literary type all round.
He liked his Greek literature. He liked, okay.
It's probably quite unusual that Trajan even needs a speechwriter. Our politicians are surrounded by hordes of people.
Spin doctors.
Doing things for them. That's exactly the word.
Yeah.
But a well-educated Roman really should be able to write his own speeches. This is the point at which that starts to happen. Trajan clearly needed it.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been the case for all previous emperors.
But considering the sort of things that he's going to have to be writing about, this is a good emperor in training role for Hadrian, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You become very familiar with the sort of things that you need to say to Rome and the Senate and to the soldiers and the kind of things that can lift up their spirits and, get everyone nice and psyched for the emperor.
Exactly. He's going through it in stages. I think Hadrian sort of has, for all the doubt about who's going to succeed, he has a really long period of mentorship. This is not just thrust upon him unexpected, as we have seen before. I mean, who would have thought that Domitian would need to step up to the plate? Because Titus was quite young and adored by the masses and a successful military emperor, etc. But he happens to die young. And so we end up with Domitian, who no one much seems to like and hasn't been prepared for that role.
So Hadrian has the right resume.
Indeed.
He follows Trajan to Parthia.
He does. So remember, this is the last expedition, really, that Trajan's going to go on, and he doesn't make it back.
Mm.
He's also made governor of Syria during this expedition, slightly later on in 117. But he's there, clearly someone who's important to Trajan at that stage that he's taken there and engaged in this, for Trajan, a really important campaign. This is, I think we can say, what Trajan wants to kind of seal his life with.
Mm.
And he's being set up to have a second consulship in 118, but of course Trajan dies in 117.
Let's talk about Trajan's death and by that extension, the rise of Hadrian. He's never formally adopted as Trajan's heir, is he?
No, he's not.
So what do we know, say, about other likely contenders? And what is it that gets Hadrian into the role, besides the fact that he seems to be, well, qualified and positioned? Why might have Trajan been a bit hesitant to name Hadrian his successor?
I really don't know. I don't know if I can even give you theories about that.
Okay.
From what we know, which is admittedly we've got patchy evidence even though we've got a biography. Nevertheless, it seems that Hadrian is making all the right moves.
Mm.
Maybe it's very easy to speak from the perspective of the future, but Hadrian seems like the obvious choice. Of course, we don't know anything really about the other potential choices.
But there were other potential choices, weren't there?
Well, we do know that the Historia Augusta names another, Neratius Priscus, which would have been a terrible name for an emperor, for one thing, so I'm quite glad it didn't come to him.
Who was he?
He was a member of Trajan's court and basically a lawyer, because later on he is one of Hadrian's legal advisors. But he's someone whose name is being thrown around. Now, you might be quite surprised that, as far as we know, he doesn't have any military career, and that seems to be essential at this stage. But many people thought that Trajan was about to name him as the successor, which, of course, if you have any thoughts at all that Trajan's death is suspicious, and I think that's what the Historia Augusta is perhaps trying to imply, that Trajan was got rid of before he could do this.
Right. Okay.
Maybe.
So when Trajan dies, he's left with no heir and he hasn't adopted Hadrian. So what happens to move Hadrian into that position?
Well, our sources, the two that we have, do say that Plotina, Trajan's wife, had a big hand in this. And the Historia Augusta is quite open about this and says that Well, it gives it as one story, actually. The statement has even been made that it was not until after Trajan's death that Hadrian was declared adopted. So actually, we shouldn't say that it's definite that he wasn't. He may have been adopted right at the end, because even the historian Augusta says there's a story that.
Mm.
And then only by means of a trick of Plotinus. This is so bad if it's true. For she smuggled in someone who impersonated the emperor and spoke in a feeble voice.
Like the man behind the curtain kind of thing.
Well, yeah, the idea that somebody's pretending to be Trajan and naming
Hadrian
as the next emperor.
So that's that source. What does Dio have to say about the situation?
This is from the very beginning of Book 69, from Chapter 1. Dio tells us that Hadrian became Caesar and emperor owing to the fact that when Trajan died childless, Attianus, remember who was the former guardian along with Trajan of Hadrian, together with Plotina, who was in love with him, secured him the appointment, their efforts being facilitated by his proximity and by his possession of a large military force, which always helps, and Dio tells us that his own father had inside information here. He says, "My father Apronianus, who was governor of Cilicia, had ascertained accurately the whole story about him, and he used to relate the various incidents, in particular stating that the death of Trajan was concealed for several days in order that Hadrian's adoption might be announced first. This was also shown by Trajan's letters to the Senate, for they were signed not by him but by Plotina." So the idea is that she's the power behind the throne, and in some way, and there are various different stories adduced there, the, you know, bringing in a ringer for the emperor, or just not telling them the emperor was dead yet and having letters sent that were signed by her, that she maneuvered Hadrian into the succession.
We can at least say dubious circumstances, can't we? Dio's father's relating this after a few drinks one night. It's his favourite drunk story or whatever.
And of course he has the connection because he's in Cilicia, that he's in the right place where Trajan dies. Yeah. So he's on the spot. And he almost has to have a story.
Hits a few jars. Did I ever tell you about the time Hadrian became emperor? There's one other rabbit hole of research that I kind of sent you all these things about Trajan's death, because Dio said that Trajan thought that he was poisoned.
Yeah, what may add to this is that there is some evidence, and it's not from Dio or the Historia Augusta, is that somebody close to Trajan died very soon after Trajan, and that was one of his close servants. So the idea is, if Trajan was poisoned, and there was a suggestion of this in Dio, then maybe somebody else close to him was got rid of. And that person was responsible for serving his drinks. It's sometimes translated as butler, being the person who attended him at table. A man called Phaedimus, who's a freedman, who dies on the 12th of August in 117. A few days, we don't know exactly how many, after Trajan.
So it's suspicious timing, but it could also be that if you're the butler and you're travelling with Trajan, you could have caught the exact same thing caught.
There are various theories. Now, we don't have it spelt out in any narrative, and so this has actually been put together by detective work based on an inscription that's been found about Phaedimus. So we're getting it from two very different kinds of sources. One literary, the idea that Trajan thought he'd been poisoned, and one an inscription that's been set up by a freedman of the freedman of Trajan.
Right.
So the freedman is called Valens, and he has put up an inscription to Phaedimus, who was that attendant of Trajan. He has written on this inscription, which is fragmentary. We don't have all of it, but it says that this freedman was the servant who brought him drinks and served him at the dinner table, that he died at Selinunte, which is out in the region that Trajan died on, and the date that he died, 12th of August, 117.
That's a matter of days after Trajan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the inscription was at Rome, because his remains get brought to Rome in, 13 years later, in 130 CE. It's very precise about the dates, which the Romans often were in terms of how long people lived or exactly when they died. And so I guess it's quite fortunate, if you want to be a conspiracy theorist, that this date is named so very precisely. And also, given the very partial state of this inscription, that date is very clear on there, because other bits of the inscription are missing and have to be pieced together. So this does feed a narrative which is plausible. And if you were creating a drama of this, I'm sure that you could...
Oh, you'd have Plotina kill the butler, yeah.
Yep, and you might have it from the point of view of Phaedimus, or maybe the freedman of Phaedimus, who eventually puts up the inscription and sees his poor ex-master callously killed in this way just to cover it all up.
Yeah, yeah. No matter how it happened, though, it worked out in Hadrian's favour, I suppose. He is now the Emperor of Rome.
He is. He will go back to Rome in triumph off the back of a very successful emperor. And, of course, the first thing he's going to do is deify Trajan, which makes him the son of a god. He then builds a temple to his deified father, completes the building projects, including the very glamorous Forum of Trajan in Rome, and continues to have a very long and successful career like Trajan did.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University. And you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it on iTunes. If you're inclined, please leave a review, or at least give it a rating. You should do it to every podcast you listen to. It shows your appreciation and helps other people find the podcast. You can like Emperors of Rome on Facebook and go on there and talk about murder conspiracies. And you can follow myself and Rhiannon on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans and I'm at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, Hadrian reaches Rome, receives a warm / lukewarm welcome, and starts making changes right away. But until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic. And thanks for listening.